Ever feel like there's a better way to build? So do we. I'm Matt, and welcome to the Mindful Builder podcast, where we believe in education through storytelling. Join me and my co-host Hamish as we both have a passion for building better, breaking barriers, and sharing our experience within the building industry. We're not pretending to know it all. In fact, we're learning right alongside you. Join us each week as we tackle complex topics like building science and mental well-being, inviting the brightest minds to connect curiosity with expertise. We want this to be a real conversation, encouraging vulnerability through honest discussions. So if you love this podcast and you're ready to join in, learn and build better, please do us a favor and subscribe wherever listening. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode, plus it really helps us out. And if you're feeling extra generous, a 5-star rating and a quick review would be amazing. Your support helps us reach new listeners and even better, allows us to book incredible guests for the future episodes. Thank you so much for being part of our community. We truly appreciate you. And now on to this week's episode.
Is that yours, Dan?
No. Did you get one too?
I've got one. If you want to, I'll finish off later if you want another one. I drink coffee like crazy.
Are we recording now?
Yeah, we're recording. Okay, good. We're going to go on to two points here. One, we've got Hayden from Pricer Plan in at the moment. Actually, I need a clap. That's so they know to edit it.
Can we actually leave everything in that we've just done? Because it just shows how chaotic everything is in this podcast.
Behind the scenes.
But then it just turns out to this magical, beautiful podcast episode.
Yeah. So Hayden from Pricer Plan, I'm going to get that in 3 seconds. But we last recorded at the ArchiBuild Expo probably about 6 weeks ago, and a lot has changed in our lives since then.
A lot has changed.
Yeah, we've had a lot. I've had my first child and you've had your third.
We welcomed little Juniper May into the world about 2.5 weeks ago.
That's delightful.
Yes, it was amazing. Yeah. A girl, which is different for me. But you have a little girl.
We had a little girl, little Noah Nevi. Baby brain. That's why everything's going wrong at the start. But actually, we've got a pretty chill. She's an absolute... She slept 7.5 hours straight the other night.
You know, you've got kids, haven't you?
And keep telling me it's going to change.
Matt's like, how is it? And he's like, oh, it's awesome. She's sleeping. She's eating. And I'm like, today?
Yeah. Every time he says it, she sleeps more and eats more. So I'm like, keep going.
Maybe you do have this dream kid. Look, and mate, honestly, Juniper's the same. But, you know, life is great. I feel...
What's your biggest realization when you get your first child? Like,
I'm struggling. I'm struggling with this a bit at the moment. Running a business is difficult. Having a child is difficult, and trying to find the limitations of trying to run your business, but also be present. I'm really struggling with that at the moment. I'm not struggling. Struggling is the wrong word. Trying to balance it because I'm back 70%. My 70% is still 8-9 hours. The hard thing is I still rely on an extra 3 hours some days to get my stuff done. Yeah. And especially in a climate where pricing, which we're about to get into, is really difficult. I'm trying to get projects to a budget to meet the brief, which don't align.
Yep.
And I need those projects for the future. I'm also building my own house, which is an important stage where we're finalizing a few little materials. And then I've got my normal jobs running. I'm loving it. I've got it very easy. I've got an amazing support network. Like my wife is incredible and what she's gone through in the whole, but like I'm just crazy.
Awesome.
But it's not a problem. It's just learning. I'm just learning to balance. So I'm finding at the moment the big thing that's working for me is like she's waking up about 5. I just jump on my computer. I just stay awake. There's no point trying to get that extra 45 minutes sleep.
Yeah. And I mean, Hayden's probably experienced this too. Like the biggest change is the first one. Because your life just completely changed.
Yeah.
Like what we've found with Juniper is, you know, we've had ups and downs with children and all that kind of shit over the last few years. And the third one just seems, I don't know, just there's a lot of muscle memory there and it just feels normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you feel with your third? And we're not talking about costing, but I think this is relevant because there's a good segue.
Children cost
there's
you a lot of money.
There's a good segue coming up.
Well, my first, her middle name is May. As well.
How do you spell it?
M-A-E.
Same with ours, yep.
Yep, Eliza May.
Twins.
She's now 21.
Wow.
So I've got a 21, 19 and a 17-year-old.
So right. What's worse, a newborn or a 21-year-old?
Well, that was the realisation for me was that when I had a first child, I was like, oh, I'm a father forever now.
Yep.
This will be forever. So
it is cool.
It's wonderful. So it just constantly changes. So now I've got a 21-year-old who's just returned from 2 years travelling overseas.
Oh, wow.
She's fantastic. She's working in the business for us.
She's slotted
back into working for us. So
it's just the balance. Wonderful. It's the that's the heart. Like I'm. It's just and it's learning. Like I'm just trying. It's going back to honestly, and I've got to probably go back and listen to one of the original podcasts with Julie. It's like it's creating boundaries, and that is what I'm learning. Yep. My boundary at the moment. I'm just finding what works. Like I've just been setting up my phone at the moment to alter the focus mode. So at like 4 o'clock, my phone goes onto a mode of only certain people can get onto me, and then all my messages are now getting filtered, so only certain people are going to pop up at certain times unless
that's
I change
PM,
it
at 4 p.m.
4 p.m. 4 p.m. all the way through to 5 a.m.
Wow.
So yeah. I'm actually fixing that to create the boundary for myself.
As a busy business owner, Matt, like how do you then balance doing everything and cost projects? Like surely there's another way to cost building projects.
So I'd say this space for
How's me. How's that for a segue?
Yeah, I know. For me at the moment, I reckon I have seen estimating pricing in the past year has changed so much compared to – we've seen more change in the past year than we have all the years before, I reckon, with pricing and the way we're tackling construction costings.
So, look, I reckon that's a nice segue to throw it to Hayden and say, Hayden, who are you and what do you do and how can you help builders?
So I'm a father, husband, lover, businessman.
Builder,
yep. Carpenter. Been many, many other things prior to that. But the current, what we do is we own a construction estimating company. We help residential builders, small to medium-sized guys. We take the pressure off them with estimating their projects. But I guess what is estimating, we see it as a much, much bigger picture than just crunching numbers and getting out a tender. We see estimating as a whole system.
Yep.
So there's many mechanisms that we provide to support builders from qualifying at the beginning right through to setting up project. So it's a whole ecosystem that we see estimating support as.
Could you just unpack that for a second? Because like, we've dabbled in a couple of different ways of estimating. You know, we've gone through you guys before. We've also got our own internal estimator, but we've also used other estimating services as well. And I love that you call it a system because it is so much more than just someone quantifying how many labour hours and quantifying how many material bits and screws and timbers and whatever goes into a project.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than that because there's also the delivery side of it, which I think you guys do really well. Mm-hmm. So could you maybe unpack that a little bit?
Sure. So the way we see, I guess a good example to use here is when somebody calls us and they're under pressure, like Matt, he goes, I'm under pressure, I've got this project, I need someone to put the estimate together for me. And if they're a new inquiry, my first question is not like, great, give me the project. It's like, okay, how did you qualify that lead and what system do you have? And so I will want to know that before I just launch into doing an estimate for them.
So funnily enough, I was in a meeting about this topic yesterday and there's about 130 builders talking about this and they were just like trying to work out how to give the client a cost on the first phone call. I was like, guys, have you even validated the client to see if you get along? Mm-hmm. Like this makes – there's so much more before we talk about pricing before you get to that point.
Yeah. So that's how I lead off with any new inquiry. I want to understand that. And then we actually have a pre-construction process that we give away for free.
Yeah.
It's a whole template pack that they can just have just to, because there's so many people need that because they're just, builders are just in this responsive mode.
Yeah.
They get the phone call, they respond. Oh, yeah. And then they, exactly what you said, Matt, they feel like they need to give somebody a price or a price indication right from the start. So implementing a process related to qualifying their leads is really important. So prior to even getting to putting down the full detailed estimate, there's a lot of stuff has to happen in place first.
And I mean, I guess I can just speak from my experience with dealing with you guys because you do ask a question like, is this negotiated tender or is this a tender process?
Mm-hmm.
Do you approach those two costing exercises differently? So say if we're the only builder costing a project, so it's a negotiated tender or it's going into a tender pool of 3 to 5 builders, is your approach the same for both of those estimates?
The pre-construction process, which is everything prior to actually doing a full detailed estimate,
yep.
is pretty much the same yep. because we believe that you still have to qualify them, whether it's a tender process or a negotiated
yep.
tender. And I think you still have to qualify.
100%. I couldn't agree more.
Once you get to actually crunching the numbers on it and putting the full estimate together, that's pretty much the same.
Yep.
Yeah, because I think the details required regardless. Yeah.
Yep. Because it's interesting. I haven't tendered a project for a long time, and you're always going to get three wildly different prices. You're going to get a high one, a middle one, and a low one. Mm-hmm. The low one, they've got no fucking idea what they're doing. The high one's probably where the price is going to be, but the clients always pick the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And have you got any data related to, and I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but do you have any data related to estimates that are going into a tender process versus estimates that are a negotiated tender, and how many of your tender prices actually go to site? Because I'd imagine that the prices that you're giving are actually correct, mm-hmm. but are probably on the higher side.
So are they the higher side though? Is that just what the value is?
No. I say so they're perceived as being higher.
Yes.
Like if they're in a pool, that they're probably higher because you're quoting them correctly.
Yep.
Whereas the builders here that are just part of a tender pool are probably just pulling some numbers together and going, here you go.
Yep.
And, you know, throwing a dart at the wall and hoping that's right.
Yep.
Do you have any data related to how many of those tenders go to construction?
Not on people that are in a tender process, no. We know we've got data on our overall
yep.
company, but there's no differentiation between those that are negotiated versus a,
yep.
so
versus a tender.
Tender for me, I think, one, it's a race to the bottom.
Yep.
Secondly, if the architect or building designer has not designed that detail, that's not included. So I think as you do a tender, the rate and chance of a variation is so much higher compared to a negotiated tender
yep.
because those details have not been discussed. And I think that's something that really needs to be considered because it's not just the tender of what you start at, it's what happens during the site.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And one of the things that I think you guys do really well is when there's deficiencies in the plans, you guys are actually making suggestions. I think you've even said to us, we actually think this is what should be going here, so we've actually made that allowance.
Right.
So you're actually picking things in the plans that aren't there and putting cost to it, not just quoting what you see.
Yeah, yeah. Can I add in on that? So I would also go as far as saying a negotiated tender is you actually thinking how to build the project,
yes.
where a tender project is just like, we don't care how you build it, we'll work that out later. And
yep.
if the plans are wrong,
yep.
we'll hit
yeah,
you with the variation.
So what we do differently, what is the big difference in the way we support our clients, whether it's a negotiated or a pool tender, is I'm saying, are you sure you want to be in this tender process? And how many people are there is a question. What contract is going to be put in place?
Yep.
Is it an architectural contract?
Yep. There's another 5% if it's an ABIT contract yep. straight on the cost.
And who's going to be, is the architect going to be a superintendent on the project?
Yep.
So these are all warning signs that I think I try and educate guys about to make sure that they're really comfortable with
yep.
the process. And unfortunately, quite often as well, when you're in those tender scenarios, the architects throw the idea of charging for the quote out the door.
Yep.
So you can't charge for the quote. So there's just all these reasons why I think that's
But they also designed to about 70% and will want to get the rest later in construction.
Mm.
Because while we're on negotiated tender versus a competitive tender, are you finding people's margin and contingency differs between the two? So because I can openly tell you if I'm competitive tendering, which we don't, my contingency is higher, my margin's higher to allow for different things that can go wrong. Negotiate tender, we know the project back to front, so there should be a lot less risk.
Look, we work with so many builders and everybody's got a slightly different number that they feel is right for yeah, their markup. Yeah. What we believe is that regardless of what type of process you're in, you should just have a markup that suits your growth of your business.
Yep.
So
and the contract.
It's more about what they need for their business sustainability.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, what the common reaction is that I've learned from my clients is they feel like they're in their competitive tender. Their tendency is to reduce their markup because yeah. they think, oh, I'm in a competitive scenario. Yeah. I just want to be a bit cheaper to make sure I get it. So they'll sacrifice their markup. That's really common. But really dangerous. And then I love the fact that I just then follow up with the discussion about that and what that means and asking what they know about the difference between markup and margin. So I try to do a lot of educating in what we do as well.
And I know that there's homeowners listening to this podcast, so I am just going to jump in here and sort of justify why builders should not reduce their margin mm-hmm. or markup.
Yep.
It costs a certain level of money to run a business.
Yes. Right?
So whether that's 17, 18%.
It's usually between 10 and 22%, I think, in construction.
You're right. So I know that mine's at 17 to 18%. Yep. So I know a minimum I need to mark up my business 17 to 18% just to cover costs.
Yep.
Before my business makes any money whatsoever.
Yep.
You know, and as a homeowner, you want your builder to make money. Mm-hmm. There's no point in him losing money because I guarantee if he starts seeing or he or she starts seeing they're starting to lose money as the project's getting to an end, they'll cut corners, I guarantee it, to try and...
Yeah.
We see this, I joke here, we see this over social media so much. I've got a builder who I've been talking to who has missed out on two or three jobs because he was cheaper and has been sending me the project that he missed out on. Like, look at all the shortcuts that have been taken. And he's like, that's what they're paid for and that's why they're 300 grand more cheaper. Yeah. But look at what they're stupidly putting this on social media. And I'm like, that's non-compliant.
I mean, in summary, know your numbers, know your break even first and then work out what you want to make. Yeah. But you talk quickly about, you said you have a whole pre-construction process. So what is that template that you offer or that, I guess, that pathway or steps that you...
I've tried to keep it really simple and digestible.
Which is great for builders.
Yep, because a lot of guys, when they're starting off, you don't want to get overwhelmed with extra administration tasks, but having a process that from the time you receive a first phone call through to when you actually deliver that contract, that's the pre-construction process. So what it looks like, I've broken it into three stages. Stage one is... let's get to know each other, and I give a sample questionnaire.
And when you say get to know each other, that's the builder and the client.
The builder and the client.
Builder and client,
yeah. So everything I'm doing here is helping the builder in his relationship or potential relationship with that client. So it's getting to know each other, and I just give a sample questionnaire.
Yep.
I tell them, you know, refine that to suit what you want. But, you know, questions like what's important to you, price or quality? Have you got bank finance or are you cashed up? When do you want to start? Can you give me... Have you got any Pinterest boards that you're interested in? Like, these are things that you're trying to looking for indicators that might make the project a bit tricky. So if they get past that stage, then your next stage is doing a budget assessment on them. So it's a budget qualifying step.
Yep.
Now, whether you do it yourself or use a tool or you use Priceplan, we've got a service called QBE, which stands for Quality Budget Estimate. It's a short form estimate that breaks down the various aspects of the build and puts a forecast on it.
So why not just use a square meter rate? Because it is my most hated question. Like, let's apply a square meter rate to the project and it does not work.
No, it doesn't. So our QBE essentially uses square meter rates, but it breaks the various components of the build down into about 20 different segments and then a various rate applies to that segment.
So rather than just look at the floor plan holistically, you're looking at all the individual...
I'm assuming you take into the site into, like, you account for that. Like, if it's a sloping site, that square meter rate accounts for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So design selection, quality of plans, complexity of detail. There's a whole range of qualifying factors that go into that particular service that determine where the project should sit. And then we put our numbers, we measure the various areas that relate to it, and it puts out a forecast and it says, based on this, your project's going to be between A and B.
Yeah.
And it's about a 20% range between those two things. And then the builder will then present that to the client and go, are we on track here? Where are we?
Yep.
And what we see is that 75% of those, that once a builder gets to the QBE stage, 75% of the projects go away.
It's like 80% of architectural builds don't go to site as well. Yeah.
So you're basically getting rid of 3/4 of your leads.
That number might scare some people because you might some builders out there go, well, I'm losing 75% of these, you know, potential leads or potential projects and I need to get projects on site.
Yeah.
But the reality is you want to know that project's dead in the water as quick as possible.
Totally.
Like, if you don't want to get to the point where you're doing a full cost estimate and you're $500,000 over, because you've just wasted 3 months of your time.
I've done that so many times as well. In the day, I now kick myself and you think this project's going ahead and the budget isn't meeting brief, which is the biggest issue we have in construction right now.
Yeah. So let's go back to where the QBE started for me in our company. When we first started Priceplan, we were just doing the full detailed estimates, right? We're doing that for a number of years. And then you quickly realise how emotionally, mentally draining and financially draining it is to deliver a full detailed estimate to then find out that they're about $500,000 short, or the budget expectation wasn't lining up.
Yep.
So we were like, well, how can we stop that? So we developed this preliminary service called the QBE. So it's been in existence for about 12 years. I think QBE is actually becoming a little bit of an industry slang, I think.
Well, we might do something very similar in our business.
So this is another thing. I also dislike a lot of this process at the moment because so many people are just jumping on this for the first time and don't understand how this also works.
Yeah.
And there's like, we have multiple years of mistakes learning from this. Yeah. I understand you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are now just getting excited because they see it everywhere, but not understanding the process to actually get from A to Z.
Yeah. Well, look, if people are adopting it as a concept and they're implementing it,
it's better than nothing.
Awesome. Fantastic. Because it's
if you have the right people behind you, the issue is someone, if you're doing this for the first time and then running the numbers yourself and then you're like, oh, well, I want to make this job look good to get it across the line. Well, that's defeating the purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're running a QBE for the first time, you should be getting someone like yourself involved to understand this process.
I mean, or have really good solid metrics to be working on.
But the reality is people don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where it originated from. We just saw a need, and again, I have to talk about the emotion of it because it's heart-wrenching. Like, it's so deflating, right? Builders care immensely about their client and the project, and then to reach that point where all of a sudden it just falls flat, it's just like, wasted so much time. So let's just fix that.
Yeah.
So that's where the QBE originated from.
And when did you start doing QBE? Because I'm going to take a guess, and this has come out of a result maybe of COVID and price increases.
Well, 12 years ago.
So because I've got data here, and this is what I've been playing on my phone in the background.
Mm.
Since 2020, construction prices are up 40.8% from 2020, September, to March 2024. So $1 million job, there's an extra $408,000 that is on the project.
Yeah.
And reality is most projects that we look at are starting around $1 million.
Yeah.
That's not a small amount of money. Yeah. Where I want to get with this is like there's been a huge increase.
Yeah, it's
and
insane.
Now budget is not meeting brief and we're in this pickle of construction where we need to build 1.2 million houses out of nowhere with not enough labor, not enough people to do it correctly. We were trying to spit them out at a rate that's not
It's not achievable.
The quicker you build shit homes like we have our current NCC, the more shit we're going to have to fix.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think it's a whole other thing of a whole.
But where I want to get at this is like, how have you seen with the construction prices and adapting to that? Because that's you've all of a sudden gone from like pretty solid data went back before 2020. You kind of knew that, and if you had $800,000, you're like, well, these clients have a bit of money. Now $800,000 is like goes with the click of a finger.
Price of plan is 18 years old.
Yep.
And I know square meter rates are not what you base things on, but square meter rates on average build prices, it's a relevant metric. So I remember when I started, when this is fucking how long I've been doing it is
when you're using hardwood frames.
When it was
with a
like, oh my God, $1,500 a square meter. Right?
Yeah.
Then it cracked two. And then just before COVID, it cracked three was the sort of starting point, really. And now the starting point for projects is 4.5 to 5.
Yeah. If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. And the majority of stuff we're seeing, because what we see is the people that are actually investing in their properties and doing stuff, they're cashed up clients. They're the ones that are doing stuff. So the project values are just like.
Building is for rich people now.
It is, and so projects up between 8,000 to 10,000 a square meter is becoming more and more common. So
and did all your data post COVID just have to be thrown out? Because you can't like if you've got say an average square meter rate that you're kind of looking at, did you have to go like we can't rely on any of that construction cost data pre COVID because it's gone up so much? Like how can you run an average if you're saying hey on average we know this. That we know it's going to be 3,500 a square meter. But if you're now confusing data from 2018 with data from 2022,
no,
there's a big change.
Quite. Yeah, well, absolutely there is, but it's not how we approach it.
Yeah, yeah, I know, yeah.
So to give you a bit of insight to how we do approach it, so firstly, we're lucky, we're quite large, we have a huge volume. So we would be delivering between 5 and 12 full detailed estimates per week.
Wow.
So it equates to about over half a billion dollars worth of project value per year. And what we do is each project that comes in, we run a whole classification system. We assess what type of project is, like site, like you're saying there, sloping sites, complexity of detail, passive, this, that. We classify it, right? And then when we're doing those full detailed estimates, we go, okay, this project is classified as an MR6 or an MR6 or an ACB. It's their own internal system, right? No one else sees that. It's just ours. But then we track what the result is of that estimate once it's finished.
Yep.
And then we have a number. So that's where the data for the average square meter rate is. So like it's basically being replaced monthly.
I was just going to say that's that your data is live. Like it's constantly updating itself. So it's almost irrelevant what it was in 2018.
Well, that's what I wanted. That's where I'm going full 360 because people just average it out over their whole lifespan. But I'm like, your data from before 2020 is completely irrelevant the way we build now. I always go back to the can of Coke analogies. Like everyone goes, what do you think a can of Coke costs? And I always go back to a dollar. It's now $3.50, $4. But it's the same as building. We still think building is 1,500 a square meter, 500,000 gets you an amazing architecture home. The reality, it doesn't, because prices have gone up, as I said, 40.8%.
Yep. And it's and I feel for the consumer as well, like the homeowner, right? I feel for them because they're the process is ass about. Right? This is the fact that they're going to a designer or an architect for advice first on what to expect.
And then come back
to the bill. So it's completely freaking ass about.
Yep.
And then the poor consumer gets a shock, you know, when the builder tells them reality or when Pricer Plan tells them reality.
Do you know what? And again, I'm maybe I'll jump in and I don't know, defend some building designers and architects because I know that we do throw them under the bus quite a bit.
Throw them under again.
I had a designer reach out to me about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's a project that we've got in pre-construction at the moment. And he said, look, I'm about to present this design to the client. We've kind of run it through our internal metrics and we think it's going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I replied, I looked at it for 30 seconds and said, don't even breathe those numbers to the client, please, because they're way off.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be between here and here. But the simple fact that he's actually reached out to me, run and past me and asked me before he's actually said it to the client tells me that designers and architects are actually starting to realise the input that a builder, the valuable input that a builder can put into a project in those early stages.
So true.
3 or 4 years ago, that wasn't the case.
No.
Now I feel like they're like, shit, hang on, our projects aren't going to site. How can we make them go to site? And it's actually putting a design in front of the client that's a reality, not a dream.
Sure.
Because so many times, how many fucking projects have fallen over, even now?
Oh, I've had over $10 million worth of work fall over in the last 12 months because budget didn't meet brief.
Yeah.
I also want to say that I feel so sorry, and I said this to an architect yesterday, architects and building designers have it so hard when they need to, they've got a budget that comes to them, they need to now design to that budget, and where do you start to put a pen on paper? Like, they are so hard, and I think that any advice I'd probably have to clients or anyone looking to build, any advice to anyone looking to build would be there's three things. It's your budget, that's what you want to spend. Then there's your brief, and that's what you've told the architect that you want to build. And then there's the build cost, and the build cost is what that brief costs to build. The budget at that point is totally irrelevant because it's the budget and brief never align.
Yeah. So I guess if you're a homeowner wanting to build a home or renovate a home, I think that a really important question that you should ask of your architect or designer is, have they got a builder involved in the design consultation? I think that's an important question. If you're a builder and you are looking to grow your business and you're looking to align with architects, ask them at which point the builder's input comes to play. That's what you should be seeking out for your ideal client.
Yep.
It's not fair to put the pressure on the architect to draw it but also work out how to build it. That's not like everyone has their strengths.
Everyone has
fair on them.
If we're talking about this pre-construction thing being a process, there are multiple people that are within that process. It's not just the architect.
It's not just
the estimator. It's not just the builder. It's everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody has really important input into that entire process for the project to be successful.
Yeah. Yeah, if there's one thing that I would just love to see the industry flip on its head, that just becomes the norm. I do have architects and designers that come to us
yep.
at concept stage and yep. they utilise Pricer Plan to give them a forecast and they love it because it removes them from the budget shock.
Yes.
It's not them. It's a separate party. And then that actually, there's guys that are embracing it, designers and architects are yep. embracing that, which is awesome. I applaud that. That's fantastic. I also have architects that use us that still we don't work with them. We qualify them, so we just don't work with them because they still believe that their industry knowledge is on pricing is more relevant.
Lol.
But what interesting is I've got one architect and he teaches architecture at University of Queensland. Mm-hmm. And I was asking him the other day, like in training, where does the builder come into the consultation process related to your design? And what are you teaching in relation to budget forecasting on project and managing budget? And he's like, oh, we don't.
Doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist at a university or training level because all they're focusing is on building code, energy codes, you know, design, all these. There's all these other things that make up the curriculum.
Like, and I actually
so
think
it's not being taught.
That's a really important thing to bring up too because there's a lot of conversations that we have as builders in our little builder groups saying, oh, this fucking architect or that bloody designer, blah, blah. Mm. It's actually not their fault.
No.
Because they're taught in a certain way.
That's right.
And I think we were chatting with your friend a few weeks ago and it was a really insightful conversation because I had a really aha moment.
We had to delete this conversation, by the way, just to give reference. We had to delete because they were so worried about what if the Architect Institute found out about this podcast. They were worried what they would think of it.
It was a really honest and raw conversation and it actually made me feel a little bit more empathetic towards how they're approaching things because they've been taught to do their process in a certain way. And the builder and the budget are never considerations. They're not taught how to do it. And it's something that's learnt over time.
They were conflicted, by the way. They spoke out about how they thought it was outdated.
But they do. That particular architect says, oh, well, we do recommend it's best to go to another party for a price check on it. But, you know, that's the builder.
One thing I will say about an architect or a designer going to a QS or going to someone like yourself is that's just a very broad indication of where the price is and you can't apply that price to every single builder that comes through because every single builder has different structures, have different overheads, have different...
They should almost do it with no margin. Don't put any margin on if you're going to do it...
Just to build to cost.
Just to build to cost and then if you want to... Because, again, the way that we operate and do things is differently.
I mean, unless it's a range and you say, like, it's between X, Y...
It's between 20...
And then it kind of captures, you know, what builders' markups or margins should be.
No, because you've got to have a range at that qualifying stage anyway because you can't pin a number down.
But keyword, qualifying. Yeah. Yeah. It's not a price. It is a value. It's like, a checkpoint.
It's just a huge part of what we do in our business. And I'm really, really proud of it, because it just saves everybody so much time.
Yeah. And money.
And money.
It's a validation tool for a client. That's like you spend $3,000-$5,000 to that point, understanding is your project Bible. Mm-hmm. Then you go yes or no. If it's no, you're not spending another $100K in design fees to then find out at the end that your project's not viable. And do it all up front.
Like as far as your costs go around the QBE, are they kind of fixed or are they dependent on the project value? And
there's two price points, either $495 for standard stuff, $660 if it's crazy architectural.
Okay. You know what?
Crazy architectural means there's 300 pages of documentation that we've got to digest.
That is like such a small number to pay to qualify a client within 2 weeks. Because yours might take a minute to get together and then it's a little bit of time for the builder to digest it and put it together in some kind of presentation. Like that is such a small amount of money to pay.
We brand it up for the builder as well, so it looks like it's coming from there.
Yeah. And, I mean, I know that because I've experienced it, but it's nice for you to explain that.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question, and I don't know if I want to ask this.
But ask it anyway.
And it goes back to where we started this whole conversation at the start of this, having children. Labor in Australia is extremely expensive, okay? It is the major driving factor of every construction price. Now, We at times poo-poo architects. I'm going to poo-poo tradies here. I think a lot of tradies are taking the absolute piss when it comes to what they're charging out per hour. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why I link that back to having a child is watching the nurses and the effort they go to and what they get paid, and their average $37 to $38 an hour when they should be paid a lot more than what they do. Yep. And then you've got tradies wanting $1,200 a day. Mm. I think labor in Australia is way too expensive. Mm-hmm. And I understand and respect that people need to get paid a very, very good wage. Maybe the nurses need to get paid a lot more. Mm-hmm. Maybe tradies are what they should be getting paid. But I feel that the issue that we have in pricing and construction at the moment is that everyone wants more and more and more and more. Mm-hmm. How are you navigating that conversation? Because it's something that's been on my mind for a long time and it got justified.
I want to add to that and ask you in your opinion, and I don't want anyone to hold you to this. Do you think as we're going into now, or we're currently in a more competitive market, like where there's more builders competing for, you know, lesser projects, well, in Victoria anyway,
yep.
Do you think that prices will check and come down a little bit? I don't think that there's no way they're coming down to pre-COVID, but do you think they're going to become a little bit more digestible for clients?
No.
We have 40,000 jobs in Victoria that need to go out of commercial construction somewhere at the end of this year. They don't have work. They're already trying to come into this area. Well, I feel like they're going to have – they've got to be competitive. I'm seeing for the first time people actually maybe lowering their rates to get a job.
I'm not an economist.
Yeah. I know that's a very loaded, hard question.
There's a lot of other factors that relate to that. But on the tradie level, so their approach to pricing a project is would have even less structure than what most builders have, and a lot of builders' process is questionable,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they, they have less systems related to putting a price together. And so what they typically do is just throw numbers around.
Yeah.
So really understanding what a subcontractor's real price is for a project is freaking tricky.
With no accountability because they're not licensed. And I know it's a whole nother topic,
yeah.
But they get to put in a price, go to do their job, we sign off on it, and at the end of the day, they get to walk away unless you're a plumber or an electrician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
So what do you do as a builder at putting together your tender with all of those variables and unknowns? You've got to have a seriously robust system that's seeking data from as many sources as you can, which I believe is really hard and almost impossible for the builder to do on their own, which is why I believe that using outsourced partners for estimating actually creates a more robust system if they've got good systems like Pricerplan.
And on the flip side, to argue the opposite to what I've just argued is, one, trades have to have a huge amount of insurance. The only job where they have to pay tens of thousands of dollars to have their tools to go to work that are most likely going to get stolen 1, 3, 5 times in their lifetime. So I also understand why their hourly rate is so expensive to pay for these things.
But I'd also argue, and again, this is no criticism to, you know, trades, but also argue that I don't reckon you could call up any of your trades and ask them what their break even is.
No, but I also at the same.
Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I shouldn't say that. But I know where mine is, and you probably know where yours is, and I'm sure you know where yours is too.
Yeah, but I don't think you can just single out trades with that. You could say the same of the majority of builders as well.
Well, actually, you're probably
100%.
Small business owners in general are guilty of that, right?
Yeah,
so
true.
I don't think you can just single out tradies for that.
Thanks for saving me.
No, I actually
feel for them. We're just business owners, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's just a business owner, whether you're hanging drywall or you've got running a laundromat.
Yeah.
Knowing your baseline costs of operational costs is key, but unfortunately a lot of people leave that last.
I also think that we have a number of trades who are amazing and charge a very good dollar that I think should put their price up because they're extremely good and skilled at what they do.
Yeah.
So I just think the issue that we have is you see Hamish's caulking company charging this, so I'm going to charge that, but now I'm going to charge more because they've put theirs up, and it's just – but how did you get to that number? Yeah. Like, what made you decide that that's the number that you want to charge?
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, clients are going to go ahead with their project if they see value in the number. If they think that the end result with the money that they're paying has value for them, then it's kind of almost irrelevant what the number is.
For the ideal client.
For the ideal client.
Unfortunately, not all clients have got that freedom.
Yes.
So the ideal client. So as a builder, if you're qualifying and you're looking to qualify, you got to find out who and what your ideal client looks like.
Yeah.
It's an important part of it. But unfortunately...
The ideal client is rich, isn't it? Isn't that the reality?
Yeah.
That they've got the money to... The ideal client is, yeah, they're rich and their budget meets their brief. That is the... And you're obviously a nice person. The project's cool. The location suits you.
And this is the tricky part, because I know you and I have talked about this before, and I think the reality is that that building a new home is for the more wealthy demographic, but it's shit because everyone should deserve to be able to afford to build a home.
And a healthy, comfortable home, not just a home.
A healthy, comfortable home.
So,
I think what the future of building homes will look like this question that it's almost becoming unaffordable for majority of people, I think homes are going to get simpler. We're going to go back to like homes that are just a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom, digestible home, right? Yeah. Because the wish list now, people need to throw Pinterest out the window, because, you know, you can't afford an elevated garden bed. You can't afford a skylight over your shower, even though it looks really great. But people have just got to get more realistic about what they can form. Just having a practical, well-designed, functional home.
It's keeping up with the Joneses. My next-door neighbour's got a mudroom, so I'm going to have a mudroom, a laundry, and now I'm going to have a bigger butler's pantry because you don't have one.
I mean, I actually feel that the current economic situation is going to force that hand.
Yeah, I think so.
Which I personally, from someone who's coming from a sustainability point of view, we should just be building what we need.
Yeah.
But it goes back to, like, think of the house you grew up in. Like, there was, exactly what the list you had.
Simpler.
And then you had a backyard. Now everyone's complaining they don't have a backyard. It's because we're fucking building another 100 square metres into the backyard. Mm. That's why we don't have a backyard anymore.
I want to, I mean, it's a bit of a talking about what we're doing in that subcontractor space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it's not a shameless plug, but I think it's a relevant service that we've added on that is trying to assist with that.
Yeah.
So separate to, our qualifying step, separate to the full detailed estimates, we run a procurement service as well. So they're called procurement packs. And on the project, we will estimate every individual trade scope and quantify it for them, and then have reference to the coloured plant, to the plans. And then so the electrical pack, the plumbing pack, the painting pack, all measured for them. And then the builder can then issue those and say, there's all the numbers, please quote on that.
I've got one extra thing you should add in, and I did this for the first time the other day. So I was creating an AI bot through Gemini, and I uploaded the interiors, the engineering, the plans, the working drawings, the specification, the schedule, and said, can you spit out all the notes for the plasterer?
Yeah.
And it gave me a dot point of everything they need to worry about in this.
Yeah.
Not only that, it actually pulled up contradictions within the scope, saying, well, it says here that it's got a P50, but it's also saying in that same place it's got architraves, ask the architect which one it is.
Yeah. That's right. So in terms of the brief and the scope and summarising the plans and documents, yes, you can use AI to create a summary. But in terms of quantifying in relation to the plan, at this stage, I think you still need human interpretation.
Do you
like that.
So that's what
we do. And then we use those separate to the actual full estimate, and then the builders can start engaging their contractors with that information. Or you can use a platform like BuiltGrid, which those documents go out to the general market, and then the general market can respond to those as well. So it is creating some parity in pricing and a bit more control over the numbers. And then the benefit for us as an estimating company is we start to see those quotes come back in. We relate them back into our database, and then it refines our data system.
I think that's an incredible service, because if you think about it, say my plaster, for example, is picking up these drawings. He might be looking them on his phone. He might be looking on his, laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, I think that's that many square metres. All right, that's what I think it is.
Yep.
But if you can go, just quote off this. Here's half a dozen pages. This is all of your scope. Here's the takeoff. Can you just please confirm the quantities?
Yeah. So plasters would have ceiling areas, wall areas, wet areas, external corners, square setting if required in linear metres, all quantified for them. A coloured layout in the plan that shows where those areas relate to.
And then if we're just relying on their quote based off that information, if there's anything outside of that which happens on site, and it's a legitimate variation for them,
they still have to take responsibility for the quote.
Yes.
That's on the plan. One thing I hate about trades quotes, it's only valid for 30 days. Like, fuck, come on, guys. The build's going to start in 6, 8, 6 to 8 months your part. You should warrant that quote for the length of that project.
So you know, one of the things that we're doing now is plastering is a great example. Yeah. So we know we're getting a price here, and we always check it again before we go to contract.
Yeah.
And we say to them, all right, we're starting here. We're expecting you to be on site in the next 8 months.
Yeah.
So in 8 months' time, can you look into your crystal ball and maybe just add a little bit of something to that? Because at 8 months' time, we're not talking about any price rises.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's completely fixed. That's the number that we're gonna pay you.
Yeah.
And if you don't like that at that point in time, we're going to have to go back out to the market.
And it's only fair. Like it's fair on us. It's fair on them. It's fair on the client, because we can't have three layers of a contingency on it. Otherwise, that's what inflates the projects more than ever.
That's price pressure already.
Yeah.
We're actually finding that our trades are like, you know what, I'm comfortable with this price now and I'm comfortable with it in 8 months.
And I understand COVID was a bit different, where people were copying them weekly at some point. Yeah. But I did have a question here, and you've kind of answered it in the whole, what are we speaking now, 45 minutes, how do you manage risk inside an estimation? You've kind of answered it with your whole process.
Our process is so robust. You know, you know, you've used this a couple of times. Delivering an estimate is more than just data and pretty models, right? It's not just numbers and models. It's got to have a really robust system. So that we internally we have 462 quality control checkpoints by the time you get your first draft. And then our relationship with the builder, it's a collaboration. There's lots of discussion. There's multiple meetings. There's multiple revisions. I think there's no other way to provide a service like we do and manage that risk, Matt, unless you've got a really robust system where there's a lot of dialogue and collaboration.
Future of estimating. I think it's also rapidly evolving. I think two things are going to play a big they're going to create change in the way that we estimate projects. Is one is AI, but it's going to create disruption to every practically job out there.
Yep.
Two is 3D modelling. Do you want to talk about those two, and if you guys are doing anything on that, if you can, if you have anything to offer?
Yeah, well, I am actively testing new softwares as they come onto the market. So I'm lucky enough, I've got a team that I can put some people onto that. So we've researched probably about 12 different softwares as they come onto the market. Some of them have got AI measuring. And what they do is it's basically character recognition. So it'll recognise what a door looks like, it'll recognise what a wall type looks like, and it'll go sweep through and make auto assessment. So I'm seeing that come in. We're not utilising any of that yet because I'm not seeing the efficiency, to be honest.
Wait till it's been dialed in a lot more.
Yeah. So it's going to go that way. But to what level it goes, I don't know. I think that the project home builders, they'll adopt it because it'll be easy.
And they can create their own kind of...
doing a renovation on a passive home on the side of a hill.
Yeah.
I think... It's got like any AI that we currently use, I think everybody that's trying to use it in some form or another knows you can't depend on what's going to be produced.
Yep.
There's always going to be interpretation. So I think that my service will have to adapt and change, but I think we'll still be relevant because you'll need that professionalism to adapt and interpret what the output is.
And AI is shiny, it's new, so people are jumping on it but understanding that yes, it's going to eliminate certain jobs in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, it can't eliminate everything. Like, there's no way, maybe I'm naive, but there's no way I can see, as your example, is a renovation on a hill being a passive house.
Yeah.
AI can spit it out. You know
more about it than me. I mean, isn't AI this whole learning model? And the fact that we're talking about a very specific individual project,
it's a language model. AI's been around forever. We've got Siri on our phone. People just think AI is this brand new thing that's come out of nowhere. It's been around forever. Yeah. Well, not forever, but for a longer period than most people understand. But the models that we're using with ChatGPT and Gemini, they're language models, what most people are now spitting out in their social media. And you can clearly identify when they've used it. But it's a super evolving process. It's far beyond my knowledge with this back end of how it might work. I can see it somewhere in our construction helping with our schedules. I can see maybe at some point that it just will be able to really quickly recognize this is how many downlights, this is how many PowerPoints, this is how many
lineaments. As a counting tool.
I think those sort of things I see it. I don't see it being, there's all if you as a client or you as a builder want to rely on AI giving your estimate, fucking go for it. But I ain't doing that.
What about modeling, 3D modeling?
Well, that's just going to become standard. That's the it already is like that. And the architects, when they design a project, like it's in a 3D, it's a 3D model.
It's a BIMX model. It's already there.
It's already there. So how that relates to the builder, it's not readily accessible to them at the moment. So you have to engage somebody to create that model.
Having said that, I've used it for like 7 years. The like Alter Eco give us a BIMX model, and you fly through it.
It's a different model.
It's not a construction model, but it enables you to have a very clear idea. Because the common thing I hate is when you get a set of plans and some of the elevations aren't there because it juts in and out. This allows you to fly through it.
I think you're talking about a model for like a conceptual model for someone to like see. Oh, hang on, there's some timber on that wall that I didn't quite pick up.
Yeah.
I think what you're talking about is actually using the model to then spit out bill of quantities, surface areas.
Yeah, and how to create efficiencies in construction. So a lot of the models that are currently produced or accessible, they're actually more for visualising for the designer and the homeowner to walk through. What we're doing is we're creating models, but it's just purely a fly-through on the structural.
Yeah.
Like there's no sinks.
So I don't know if
there's no mirrors. It's just a 3D model of where the steel meets the wall and how that connects to the footing, and you can fly through that. So that is the tool that actually goes to site, and then when you're standing there, you go, right, where does that thing
fit? This is something we had for our house. This is my own house. This is very early on, and I know a lot of people can't see this potentially, but we were able to like – this is just him, James, playing around if I can even work out how to use this myself. But we were able to go complete envelope, no framing. Something simple like this to start to roughly understand how are we going to get that in?
Yep.
And that didn't take the architect much time. Yep. But if you can especially get the engineering, I think it gets to a point where the architect should be uploading the engineering to make sure their heights work with beams.
Yeah, so that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
So we're taking the architectural plans and the engineering plans and we're creating using the BIMX tool to create the 3D model that looks similar to that, and then – you know, that goes to the builder. So the builder can use it. It makes them look professional. Looks like they're across it when they're having their negotiation with their client. And then it translates to actual practicality on site. And it helps us internally in our estimating process because it gives us another look at it, because to now we're measuring on 2D. So that 3D model is just going to make things more efficient for everybody.
And jobs are getting complicated. So it just – if you're like, oh, yeah, how would you actually build that? You think through your head and this is a full 360 before you wrap it up. This is why negotiated tenders are so much more important. Imagine just throwing that, like if you're doing a competitive tender, no one's using those things. No one's going to use those tools. No. Where in a negotiated tender, you're actually going through solving the problems forward, and all that information, you're probably going to spend an extra few thousand dollars to get to that point of the process, but you are actually saving so much money on site for efficiencies and saving you potential variations and it costs you a fortune because you've already gone too far.
How do people get in contact with you, Hayden? I mean, as someone who's used you before and it's an absolute game changer, I mean, we have an internal estimator, so we're kind of a bit of a hybrid approach, and it still works for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if you are a builder out there that have an internal estimator, PriceMine still offers value there because it actually just expedites that whole process. Mm-hmm. So how do people get in contact with you?
Website. Yep. priceaplan.com.au.
And you're on TikTok? Are you on TikTok as well?
I'm not on TikTok. on all the socials, we're there. We're getting a bit more present with that. You know, that's why I talk about estimating is a whole ecosystem. And we've got people like you that are sort of this hybrid model where we do the grunt work, but then your internal team takes over. We've got other guys that use us that they just want a takeoff on block.
Yeah.
So I've got a guy up in the Gold Coast. We just do concrete and block for him. That's all we do.
Wow.
And but he's doing what every trade should be doing.
Well, he's a builder. Okay. So he's got his internal team, but he just engages us to do the takeoffs and the quantities, and then he uses those to engage his subcontractors. There's another way. The majority of people, though, what we love is we just know that estimating is qualifying, putting in preliminary agreements, detailed estimates, assistance with procurement, 3D models. And then the other thing is that we do is we set all your project data up into whatever software you're using as well. So it's not just a bunch of paper that doesn't translate. We actually have another step where we set all that data up into your project management account so that it's actual tangible information right through the project. So it's a whole system.
Yeah, so just to double down on that, you'll remap your cost centers or cost codes to whatever cost centers or cost codes the builder is using.
Yes.
Yep.
And it's amazing. I love it. It's another education moment for me, the difference between people understanding what a cost code is. If anyone wants an education, give me a phone call.
Yeah, and do you know what?
I don't use them really.
I still get...
You don't use them?
Not really.
Really?
No, we just purchase order everything now.
No, we purchase order everything
too. It still has to be allocated to a cost code.
It's got to be allocated to a cost code though.
As in what sense? Like we have it limited to like, as in on your back end to zero?
No, through... I'm going to let Hayden explain.
Yeah, maybe do this off.
You explain it, man, because I'm going to butcher it. I was there.
Yeah.
And Dan for so long was like, mate, we need to get things into the right format. And it wasn't until that I just had this aha moment. I'm just like, oh.
Do you want to quickly explain it?
Was I not doing it?
Because maybe I'm doing it. I just maybe don't call it the same thing.
Maybe. Okay. So what a lot of builders do is when they're estimating a project, you have your estimating categories.
Yep.
Right? And people get confused and think that those estimating categories are their cost codes.
Yeah.
They are not. Because when you're estimating a concrete slab, you are going to have the machine to dig the trenches.
Yep.
That's earthworks.
Yep.
That goes to cost code earthworks.
Yep. Yeah.
You have the black plastic that goes underneath, that goes under, could come from the landscape supply company.
Yes.
You have Rio, that goes to Rio supply. You have concrete, you have pump. So in that estimating category, you might have 100 items in that category, but they're going to get refined into the supply code.
Yes.
And that might be reduced down to 6 cost codes.
So we can't, so Wonder Build that we use allows you to kind of click on the side preliminaries and change it all. We're a little bit different because we go, hey, concreter, you supply and do all of that, earthworks, machinery, pump. So we have we're very different where it's like supply and install, like it is, they do everything. So
yeah, well, it's still a cost code, but it's just easier for you to balance those out because it's...
You can see then overall tracking.
Versus that.
Yeah.
And if there's a variation or if you have to get on site and dig it, get in the trenches, which does that happen, Matt?
Yeah, all the time. In my RM
then,
Williams.
Do you own a pair of steel toe boots?
I actually do. I had to pull them out the other day. I had to find them.
But if you have to pull them out and you have to go on site,
yeah.
then your time on site would get allocated to that same cost code.
Yeah.
And it would show as an overrun against the subcontractor's
purchase. And it should. And this is the things that we're learning. If I'm going on site and I'm doing something, like yesterday I dropped off formwork.
Yeah.
I loaded the trailer and dropped off formwork. I should be
cost coding that.
I should be allocating that time to that particular cost code.
So that, my team do that. Yes, we have cost. Yes, so we do. Yep. I just don't. Yeah, just like it's just the way my spreadsheet or not my Wonder Build set up. So it does work. Yes,
it's just another layer of education that builders struggle to take the time to learn.
Yeah,
because they're. Time pressure, right?
You work with Wonder Build a bit, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah, why don't you do I know Wonder Build is starting to do more webinars. Like, why don't you do a whole webinar on it, that exact topic, cost coding?
We could easily do that. And it's good because Wonder Build now have cost code allocations.
Yeah.
Some of the other softwares that are out there don't.
Oh,
they just have estimating categories.
Yes.
And they don't differentiate to cost codes. So it is way better when you really want to know where your numbers are on a project. It's way more efficient to...
It's the best program by mile. We're going to get them on at some point. But, yeah, we do have to wrap this up, Sam. We're literally just hitting out on the dot. So
perfect.
Thank you for coming on, Hayden.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Pleasure. You guys were going to be part of the roadshow.
We were, but we had babies.
But you had babies.
Yeah, we had babies. Thanks, Hayden.
Pleasure.
Cheers.